Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
Exciting show today, Ed. First up, what's new?
Patreon.com/EdPiskor. I'm serializing my Red Room comic strip up there right now. It was a four-page week this past week, so 137 pages of Red Room have been completed. More than five dozen of them have hit the Patreon for the early adopter. It'll see a traditional print version sometime next year, 2021. But for the person who can't wait and needs some of this vulgarity in their life, $3 gets you the archive, and the link's going to be in the description below.
Now's a good time to hop on, too. Basically, complete first story up.
Yeah, issue one is almost completely up there, and it's Halloween season, so why not get a little bit of that in your dreams at night?
I have Octobriana, 1976, the world's first blacklight comic, has gone wide. It's in stores now, and it is selling well. I've been posting pictures, sharing pictures of empty shelves from different stores that have run out of it. So if you want this comic, and you do, pick it up whenever you see it, because it is selling well. It's selling better than I expected, and we are almost out of them.
It's going to be worth $200 this time next year.
All right, Ed. Today we're going to talk about Rory Hayes.
It's a Halloween. It's the Halloween season. Time for some horror, and Rory Hayes was not playing.
Maybe the most nightmarish of all the underground cartoonists of like the 70s, the late 60s, 70s era. He was certainly bleeding out kind of his id, but it was a lot darker than almost anybody else's that was channeling that kind of truth, that honesty onto the page. His stuff just happened to be a much darker worldview than almost anyone else's.
On a good day.
So a couple of books here that we're going to look at to kind of get into Rory Hayes. You know, his light burned very bright, but for a short period of time. He died at the age of 34 in the early 80s. Pretty much left comics, though. I think 1976 was the last comic that he made. So his comics creative period is like 69 to 76, pretty much. And his story is he hooks up with Gary Arlington's San Francisco Comic Book Company early on. This is kind of a hotbed of underground comics publishing and activity. And Rory Hayes goes to work there for Gary Arlington in the store.
Had a comic shop.
And hugely influenced by what he saw, which were EC Comics, where a lot of the comics that were available there, horror comics specifically, and it really had an impact on Rory Hayes, really got into those. And I don't know how much it influenced his work beyond the idea of horror comics being viable, you know, as a genre. So I'm going to start with Where Demented Wented. This is an overview of Rory Hayes and his comics output that Fantagraphics published, edited by Dan Nadel and Glenn Bray. Dan Nadel, we've looked at before, put together a Harry Who collection, put together the Art Out of Time, which was a lot of, I don't want to say obscure, but kind of these visionary type artists from the first half of the 20th century, plus Rory Hayes in that collection, and publisher of Picture Box.
And Glenn Bray's a guy that we covered as well, man. Bladed Eye was the book that we talked about and pushed that fucker to number one on the Fantagraphics Amazon charts for a couple of days.
Awesome, yeah. A comics artist collector, and certainly specializing, I think, in underground comics art. So
you see the cover, and then you see the photo, and he's a very, you know, bright-eyed, you know, young chap.
Unassuming in this photo.
You know it's not going to end well.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a unique cartoonist. And, you know, that's, if you're watching this channel regularly, that's probably the pattern that emerges in the stuff I look for, is I want comics that don't look like anyone else's comics. And Rory Hayes, man, that fits his comics like a glove. It opens here, one of the weirder design choices is this, like, this green ink. It works okay for some of the heavier titles, but it's tough whenever they set like your 10, 11 point type in it. But that's a Robert Crumb quote. And Crumb's quote is, "Everybody hates Rory Hayes, but I really dig him. He's a great American primitive." And there are a few quotes of Crumb's, was a big supporter of Rory Hayes. And I think it was for the reasons I say, it's visionary. This is a guy making comics that they don't look derivative. They don't look like other comics, but they do have that sense of honest expression.
Crumb is also very competitive, and you know, he's on the record telling, you know, Klaus and people like that, like, man, I guess get out of comics, get a screenwriting. art-wise, drawing-wise, in terms of craft, Rory Hayes is not going to compete with Robert Crumb's crosshatch and whatnot.
And this is a great archive. So you're seeing in this beginning intro essay, this gives kind of, there are several pieces of text in this book that cover Rory Hayes' biographical information. There's an article by his brother, Jeff, who went on to be a picture book creator, both writer and artist, and has, I think, over 40 picture books have been published, you know, very successful in that endeavor. And there's an interview from the early 70s with Rory Hayes, which is kind of amazing to read, you know, like an interview, a period-specific interview with a creator of this sort. You know, it's a very different tone than, I don't know, today everybody's, you're interviewed from about the age 7 up, so we're all used to it. So, Bill Griffith.
Yeah.
This is the Rory story, and one thing with the underground cartoonists, especially if they were based in San Francisco, is they all knew each other. And so you get a lot of information in this book from his peers talking about him and their experiences with him. This was a strip, I think it ran in Weirdo, but it's Bill Griffiths kind of describing him and his unique personality in comics.
So it was probably like very quickly, like after he passed, this would have shown up if it was in Weirdo, because I think Rory was alive and well during the Arcade days.
You know what, man? This may have originally appeared in Arcade. This is copyright 1974, so this is while he's still alive.
Oh, I see.
But one thing that emerges as you read about him, he had, you know, pretty serious drug issues.
Another one of those sad San Francisco exports.
Right. And his comics, you know, they describe them. It's paranoia, drugs, and violent crime is one of the descriptions of his comics. So pretty extreme. This is the kind of his biography. Bibliography. This is pretty much everything that he did comics-wise. It's not all reprinted here, but probably if you've heard of a specific story of his, it's in here.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, we start out with some of the stuff. You know, his style is very unique, and I feel like this is pretty indicative. As we flip through here, you're going to see he did a lot of, I don't want to say funny animal comics, but he would use these animal characters, especially this teddy bear, but they're not funny animals, they're nightmare animals. But again, unusual for, you know, this time period. I don't know if funny animals were even much of a genre by the 70s, above or underground.
But you could imagine that if he's seeing EC comics, like at Gary Arlington shop, he's seeing, you know, Barks and those kinds of comics.
Even the teddy bear doesn't make it through.
Shades of Mattioli's.
Thing to pay attention to is all the mark making. That's one of the things that attracts me. And you'll see like some huge variation in terms of how he's making marks, even within the same pages. You know, spotting the blacks is pretty unusual, where a lot of these panels don't have too heavy of blacks, but just built up textures. And other places, of course, solid blacks. Whenever he started making underground comics, it wasn't exactly his goal. He kind of fell into this crowd. He just found a home there. And his first comic was Boogeyman Comics, and it was the first time he drew with like pen and ink. So, you know, if his stuff doesn't look like other people's, it's coming from an honest place. You know, it's not like he was copying Crumb in order to get his underground comic off the ground.
Right.
It was sort of like, hey, we all make comics, you make one. And he definitely had an artistic background, and we're going to get into that with the other book that I have here. But his background was, from early age, he and his brother would make films, they would make soundtrack to films, they would make these zines that were like movie kind of zines, both about their movies and other movies that they were, you know, horror movies that they were watching, and then comics, you know, like kid comics, except they're really good. But it was something that he was always had this creative output. And like I said, his brother goes on to make picture books. Rory just kind of gets into this group with the underground comics, and so that becomes the outlet for his expression. How much does this face resemble a Fletcher Hanks?
Yeah, sure.
That's the other piece that I think you start to see certain commonality with these primitives and outsiders and naive. These weren't necessarily words that were applied to artists very much at this time. Like, that's really caught on, that outsider artist thing. But they do have common traits, and you can go back historically and find these artists that fit into that outsider mode, even if it wasn't something that was recognized at the time.
Yeah.
And he definitely has that.
That Jay Disbrow guy comes to mind with, like, his Golden Age comics kind of, there are textures and stuff in here that are real similar.
All right, so I'm kind of flipping quick here because I want to get into certain noteworthy comics. Cunt Comics is a comic that he did that came out of Snatch. So Snatch being like the sex comics that Crumb and some of the underground guys would do. The publisher of that got hold of Rory Hayes and was like, hey, we're selling these pretty well. Do you want to do something like this?
Super cheap to make. They're, you know, they're digest size. They're you know, typing paper, folded in half size comics.
Mini comics, essentially. And so Rory Hayes was down to do it. Rory Hayes was a virgin at this time. So his idea of sex was a little bit, you know, filtered through Rory Hayes. And these were comics that really turned everybody off. You know, like, if people were a little bit apprehensive about him to begin with, whenever this comic came out, it was like, yeah, he's out. This is just too dark. This is too outrageous. And, you know, you can see that this is kind of a grotesque approach, I guess, to the idea of sex. And not what they were looking for, exactly.
Yeah, and you know, this births Mike Diana and those kind of characters.
And there are things of like castration and stuff goes on through here. Reminds me a little bit of Julie Doucette's work in Dirty Plot, you know, a couple decades later.
At this time, the influence would be S. Clay Wilson doing these two-page spreads in Zap Comics that have so much castration and body horror.
S. Clay Wilson is definitely an artist that Rory Hayes was looking at and, you know, interacting with. Robert Williams, all those guys, all the Zap cartoonists.
Yeah. This is very 70s stuff, man. Like, and like, what's the chemical you take that makes you sit there and do all those dots?
See, that's what I find interesting is the mixing of these different marks, because you have that pointillism and, you know, you see that in different art, but then next to it are these lines.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's just doing whatever he's feeling.
Yeah. So you're saying he's not looking at Drouillet's Metal Erlant comics?
It's amazing the range of mark making that he's getting and the values and textures that he's bringing in. Like, this is just extreme.
Yeah. Yeah. When you see this, it makes me think that we see Glenn Bray's name on the front, and these are shot from original art, because you look at those old underground comics, man, you are not getting, you're not going to be able to print from those and get the precision that we see right here.
That's a good call. Tight printing. Yeah, this is extremely great reproduction. Good note on that, Ed, because the line work is pristine and extremely fine.
Everybody from this period has their version of this. Like, I've seen the Greg Irons version. There is a Crumb version of these, you know, almost like Russian nesting dolls, like coming out of like dudes' heads. That was an image of the time.
There's one more story in here that I definitely want to show off. This is a collaboration with Rick Griffin.
That's Victor. That ain't Victor Moscoso as well?
I don't think so. It's only Rick Griffin listed here, but there were jams. Like, these guys would share artwork and pass it back and forth and stuff. Okay, so this appeared in Weirdo number 12. Mm. And this is Popoff Hayes, the Drug Fiend. This was a strip that he put a little more time into than typical. This, I think, was done over like a 3-year span. So he would have been working on it, you know, coming back and forth to it.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, this is kind of his masterpiece, probably his most, I guess, you know, made it like the mature period of time.
It would also be the most widely distributed Rory Hayes comic, probably. Like, I can't imagine that earlier underground stuff superseded number of units sold than an issue of Weirdo.
But you can see, like, everything's on display. You know, it reminds me of a guy who goes to work in the center of underground comics, so he's seeing everything that all these creative cartoonists are doing, but then also in this comic book shop that full of ECs and, I assume, the best of the best, and he's just putting it all on the page. You can see it in all this variety of, even the lettering, you know, there's a variety of lettering approaches, very different drawing styles on the same page from panel to panel, horror, sex, it's just everything. This is like he cut out his brain and just smeared it on the page. And, of course, the drug use.
Mm.
Yeah, it's really, it's heartbreaking in that you can see the torment, right? I mean, like, he's being spoken to by media and hallucinating and, like, these alien kind of creatures.
So I am seeing, you know, the repeating theme of needles here, right? And this is actually a question that, you know, I've just had over time. In rock and roll, like, you'll see in interviews they'll talk about, you know, like, this kind of drug is good for a drummer to use or whatever. And, like, heroin's good for nobody. And I was wondering, like, is there heroin cartoonists and I guess he's the one.
Yeah, I don't know what all his drugs were, drugs of choice. I know speed is something that's mentioned a lot, and right, the needles definitely suggest the heroin. But man, like, I don't know where that comes from. You know what I mean? Like, I can't point to another image or even like a painting or anything and say like, yeah, that's a reference of this or that. I don't know anything that's referencing. You know, I think this is a person who starts making these images at a very young age, and it just completely develops his own visual language. That's pretty great. Like the twisted, what would have been his teddy bear character just turned into the ultimate distorted nightmare version. So Rory Hayes, you know, a unique talent, and it's awesome that a book like this exists where you can access so much of his work, you know, in one convenient place. Look at that, you know. I mean, really trying as a cartoonist, just trying whatever he could think of. It's great to see it. And so, how about this? It is the season of the witch.
Yeah.
Well timed. This is a reproduction of his stuff in pencil form. I mentioned that Boogeyman was like his first pen and ink attempt. This is what he had been drawing as a kid. So it's the same kind of visual vocabulary, but just done in these pencil forms. Kind of neat, man. Almost more effective, you know. It really has, as nightmarish as his comics are, once they look like a kid is drawing them, and a kid was drawing these, it just becomes even more, like, disturbing.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it conjures up the image of just, like, some weirdo sitting in his house, had some type and paper, and just churning these things out.
This is the original art for Boogeyman Comics, number one. You can see some stuff pasted up. You can see things, whited out or obscured with paper covering them up. It's kind of cool. Kind of the artist edition version of this underground cover.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's got to be Glenn Bray providing that.
Definitely. Man, the shit...
I want to... I'm ready to flip to the next book, but I hate to skip any of these pages. They all look really cool.
The shit ages green.
Yeah.
It's so weird, man.
In the last several years, so like once he leaves, this is his brother talking about him and their life growing up. Once he leaves comics, he goes on to be a landscape painter, is what he did the last several years of his life. And this overview of his life, you're seeing some of the childhood comics that they did. And like a lot of this stuff, most of their childhood output has been lost. I think it was lost to a fire.
Always fucking fires, man. The bane of comic history.
It really is. If you're going to draw on paper, gotta have those metal filing cabinets. And then that interview with Rory Hayes from 1973, which is a really great artifact. I don't know whether this is still in print or not. If it is, I highly recommend it to everybody. This is the second book of Rory Hayes comics that I have. This was put out, I think, by Picture Box, so by Dan Nadel, whenever he was still publishing. And what this is the Dolls Weekly. That was the name of one of the publications he produced as a kid. And so this reproduces a bunch of his childhood comics, what has survived, and it kind of, you know, it describes what those are, French and English. So, you know, aiming for the widest market ever, as you can imagine, this not a huge market, so you got to figure out how to sell this stuff. But these are the reproductions, and they're mostly in pencil. They cover from, I think, ages 12 to 18 would have been like what this work is from. Imagine that's 12 or 13 years old. This is the kind of comics you're creating. One, they look really good, but two, wow.
Your teachers are going to have some questions. They're going to have to send you to somebody.
Yeah, and we'll just flip through a few of these, but what I want to post out is how much, like, they were creating this whole world. So they all have these mail sections. They'll have, like, ad sections that advertise the films that they're making, and you could buy them, like, buy 100 feet of film you would buy from them for their movies that they were making. But he would make, like, all these posters and stuff that would go with the movies, the fictitious movies, and then, of course, the comics. That's another one. I don't think you want your teacher, your middle school teacher, finding this thing. Definitely going to be some questions about you.
All of the cartoonists, man, like, from this period, they have their juvenilia, a big body of work that they did as kids, and it's just, like, there wasn't anything good on TV. Like, this is, like, what you had to sort of occupy your brain, especially if you ain't getting picked first in gym class or whatever. Like, these guys, it was a good time when there were no cell phones and shit to, like, waste your fucking time with.
Yeah, that's what you see here. Somebody that's bursting with creative energy and just figuring out what to do with it. Selling subscriptions to these things. They're so complete as magazines, you know, so they would have little games, things that you could play, movie reviews, movies to come. You know, they were just a complete magazine and, you know, emulating, I'm sure, whatever he was seeing and reading, you know, monster magazines and stuff like that. But like you could send for photos. They made records. Apparently they made a lot of these records. That's referenced maybe by Gary Arlington or somebody. But they were like the wax records that you would make yourself. You know, you pay like 35 cents and go in a recording booth and come out with these things. They didn't play very well. I think Kim Deitch might say that. You know, they don't play very well. And if you play them much, they kind of disintegrate.
Yeah.
But you can see, like, that's what he's obviously looking at, right? Comics and monster magazines. And then, well, what does he have that's the equivalent of that? And so, like, some of this stuff is real and some of it isn't, which is another one of those layers of things I love. And once you add the fire, it becomes even more obscure as to, like, what exists and what doesn't now from this. But you can see this is a kind of a limited collection, too. This is certainly not everything that he did, back issues, selling back issues. Oh, and I wanted to point this out, Ed. If you look closely, you can see this texture, very similar to the From Hell texture that we were wondering about with Eddie Campbell. You know, it's a like a woven kind of texture. He liked to draw on these little pads of paper. Let me see. I have Irish linen, it was called, and it was a woven texture. And so he liked drawing on those, and a lot of these are drawn on that kind of paper, and you can see the same texture that we see in some pages of From Hell.
That's sick, man. You know, it reminds me, like, when I was a kid, my parents would buy me typing paper to draw on. When times were lean and the folks were out of a job, there was this, like, onion skin typing paper that the second you put your hand on it, the moisture from your hand absorbs into it, and it just warps immediately. And I would, like, cry, like, Mom, please don't buy me that. Please don't buy me that kind of paper. That paper sucks.
That's almost copied from, like, House of Mystery logo.
You have right.
Look how much lettering is in all these things, too.
I mean, the guy's just, he's manic.
Yeah.
A manic person, man.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, but pretty great document. Like, this is one of those books that I'm so happy this exists, because I would never, ever see any of this work. Right. Otherwise, it's, you know, it's not like this stuff is coming out anywhere else. And I ended up tracking this down from Printed Matter in New York. So I don't know if they still have copies of it or not. Not the easiest thing to find, but not impossible if somebody really wants it. And it's the Dolls Weekly. So those are the two Rory Hayes books that I'm aware of. He pops up in things like Underground Histories. You can find him in. And the Dan Nadel Art Out of Time book that we mentioned earlier. But one of the more distinct voices from the Underground comics.
Yeah, and the place that, you know, the majority of people, if they're like, hey, he's familiar to me. There's a panel or two in Understanding Comics where Scott McCloud mentions Rory Hayes and shows a page or two of, or a panel or two of his comics. So that's perhaps where you recognize the name if you weren't familiar at the jump. What do you say, Jimmy? Get out of here?
Yep, that's it.
All right, Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when the next vids are available. Octobrion is in stores now. Going quick. I'm seeing a lot of stuff online where people are sad that they didn't have the chance to get the comic when truthfully they did have the chance. And some of you still do, so get on the ball with that. Is it available through
AdHouse Books.com, Amazon, Target had it for a while on their website. Yeah. So it's available right now. It's definitely selling fast. If you see it in a store, I would recommend grabbing it because we are almost out of it at the publisher side.
Patreon.com/EdPiskor is where I'm serializing the Red Room comic strips for early adopters. $3 gets you the complete archive, and issue one is almost completely up there. Going to start issue two at the end of October.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything that we have going on. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
One more, Jimmy. Give them those marching orders, dude.
Read more comics.